It may cost you a little more in gas to get there, and once you get there, the prices might be a tiny bit higher, but nothing beats a good meal at a nice restaurant. Welcome to Open Line. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Fred Anderle today. This hour, we look at the restaurant business, the new trendy restaurants, the old standbys. Our guests are two men whose hobby is to eat and write. Columbus Monthly Restaurant Critics John Champlin. Welcome, John.
Hi, Mike.
And John Marshall. Welcome, John.
Hi, Mike.
This will be easy for me. Both Johns. So I can't go wrong with my...
Every Tom, Dick, and Harry's name is John.
With my name issues, John's great. This is always a fun show, and we welcome your reviews, both good and bad. You can give us a call at 292-8513, 292-8513, or you can email us at openline@wosu.org. Let's get right into it. Let's first just talk about in general what it's like to go out to eat these days. The economy is, you know, it's down a little bit. Gas prices are up. Food prices are up. Has the restaurant experience changed at all? Have you noticed as you make your way around town?
John?
I haven't noticed any change at all. Uh-huh. And I believe in this, you know, I try not to know restaurant owners because I don't want to be moved by sympathy. But you hear gossip. And what I'm hearing is that it's holding up pretty well. Folks mm-hmm. still need to eat. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a little bit of a counter-cyclical business.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing fewer people in the restaurants, more empty tables, easier to get rid of it?
My overall sense that there's something of a downturn, but a modest one. Now, mm-hmm. remember, Columbus seems to be somewhat insulated from the downturn in the economy generally. Mm-hmm. And that was true in the last dip we had. This is sort of the unique nature of a combination of factors here in Columbus. Not saying that we're not, you know, people aren't suffering from the foreclosure crisis and all that. But so I think that the downturn is modest. Probably where it's being seen is not in the upscale restaurants so much as in the modest places or the chain places. My guess is that overall they're suffering some effects from the economy.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, nothing changes the fact that it's a very tough business.
Yeah.
Even in good times.
Always has been, always will be.
As you look at menus, we see the food prices rising at the grocery store, you know, slightly, sometimes not so slightly. Are you seeing menu prices climb a bit?
I've seen twice here in this last week and a half a restaurant indicating on its menu that, you know, sorry, but a couple of the food stands at North Market had signs up saying, wish we didn't have to do this, but we've got to increase our prices a little bit because of fuel and other costs.
Mm-hmm. The restaurants that deal that serve a lot of rice, they must be impacted as well, I would guess.
No. One would guess.
Yeah. Okay, 292-8513, 292-8513 if you'd like to join in our conversation.
Yeah, John and I want some tips about where to go to lunch today.
So. Right. There you go.
Yeah, that's really the reason we come here, Mike, is to get tips from people about where to go eat.
So we've got an hour and a half to make those
There's
plans.
Only two of us, and there are thousands of restaurants in Central Ohio, so we really need to know, you know, what's out there, what's new.
Yeah, it's probably listeners have better information than we do about how prices are trending, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
since they cover many more places than we have time for, despite mm-hmm. our best efforts.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people look at gas prices when they're deciding whether or not to go to a restaurant? You might not come downtown if you live in the northern suburbs. You might not go all the way to Easton.
Well, I bet they do now.
Yeah,
they start getting close to or have topped $4 a gallon, mm-hmm. I would think. You know, it's there's a lot of trend towards, and I think it's a wonderful trend environmentally, if nothing else, towards local. Eating local, staying local, mm-hmm. you know, walking maybe to your favorite restaurant, which is why it's great if you live in the Short North or Victorian Village or German Village or even Clintonville. You can – Worthington, lots of neighborhoods. If you live close enough, you can walk to good restaurants and mm-hmm. not have to drive.
Take a bike or take yep. – I've seen families get on the bikes and ride down bike paths or down the street to get to wherever they're going.
Well, I exercise to be able to eat, so that's a good suggestion.
292-8513. You can order that dessert when you're walking home or you're taking your bike home. 292-8513 if you'd like to chime in. Okay, let's get right to the best new restaurant. John Marshall, if you had to pick one or two of the best places you've eaten recently, what would you take?
You mean new places?
New places. Let's start new places.
Well, you know, it's not a new place. It's an old place with a comfortable feel, but it's got a brand new chef and owner, and that's L'Antibes. L'Antibes was the little French restaurant owned for years by a guy named and run by a guy named Dale Gussett, who many of our listeners will remember had a restaurant way back when called L'Armagnac. It was the first serious French restaurant in Columbus, at least as far as I know. And then he was out of Columbus for a while and then came back and opened L'Antibes a number of years ago. And he decided to sell. Sold the restaurant recently, and John and I happened to go there the other night, and they're doing really well. They haven't regulars need not fear that they're going to be served vapors and essences and weird stuff, because he's kept the familiar French cooking on the menu, comfortable, you know, French home cooking, I guess, is one way to describe it. Not peasant food.
But most homes don't get that good.
Well, yeah, so I really like that.
Where is it?
Yeah. It's in the Short North. It's in a little – John, do you remember the side street?
No, I don't remember the side. I think it's in the 700 block of North High Street.
I have our handy restaurant guide here in the back of Columbus
it's
Monthly.
It's under L, believe it or not.
That's hard. Go ahead.
772 North High Street, Suite 106.
So you're right there, right in the 700 block.
Yeah.
It's hard to do when a restaurant that's been around for a long time, especially family-owned, changes ownership. I mean, what's the success rate of the new owners picking that up and carrying with it?
I'm going to guess. This is an educated guess, but I'm going to guess that it's probably less than even brand new restaurants.
Wow.
And that record isn't particularly good. It's a tough business, as John says. So.
Yeah, the regulars are probably very wary.
Let me mention another place that just opened that I've heard wonderful reports about. It's called Sage American Bistro. It's in the that space between what used to be a Never Never Land but is sort of changing and growing and becoming nicer, between the sort of the end of campus, Lane Avenue, mm-hmm. and, say, not Weber Road, but Arcadia,
mm-hmm.
Before you get to Arcadia. It's a little place. They've got parking in the back, mm-hmm. and I think even on valet parking some nights in the back. But it's owned and run by a guy named Bill Glover, who's used to be the executive chef at the faculty club at Ohio State, and decided to venture into the restaurant business. So it's called Sage. I haven't been there yet, but I've heard at least a half dozen good reports. So people may want to check that out.
John Champlin, you pick your favorite two.
Well, let me mention a very moderately priced restaurant to show you that not all good food has to be expensive. It's called – oh, my goodness. If you read the name of the restaurant in English, it would look like Hawa, H-A-W-A, Russia. Mm-hmm. They chose Hawa because it's a transliteration of the Cyrillic, and then it would be Nasha Russia, our Russia. It's up on 161, just east of Cleveland Avenue, very modestly priced, and the food is recognizably real Russian food. The bread has that lovely sour rye bread tang to it, although not very pronounced. It's certainly mild enough that anybody'd eat it. The borscht is dressed with a dollop of sour cream and some fresh chopped dill. Mm-hmm. They have a whole variety of pierogi and pelmeni and vareniki and other, you know, little dumpling-like, I suppose I could say ravioli-like Russian specialties.
Mike's nodding like he understands all this Russian food that you're telling him about.
I'm just kind of picturing it. And borscht, I know what we're talking about.
It's really very moderately priced. Oh, and when you order a cup of tea after dinner, it doesn't come in a glass with a lump of sugar to hold between your teeth, but it is real tea, not tea bag tea, and it tastes recognizably Russian. I traveled in Russia back when it was the Soviet Union and ate dismal hotel food, and sometimes you'd find restaurants that were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And this is recognizably Russian food. It's not high end. It's not chefy food. It's what any Russian would recognize as home cooking comfort food. And for the price, I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm. Who owns it? Are they Russian immigrants?
I have no idea. I try not to know that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. But you just know the food's good, and it's not too expensive.
Right.
How about another choice?
Oh, goodness. I hesitate to mention this place because it's so hard to park at. Well, it's not impossible to park at. It's a Korean restaurant called Diaspora.
Is this the place where you ate the baby silkworm?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't baby. It was the pupa. They're covered in some kind of brown shell. Uh-huh. You know, you see it on the menu and you want to know what it's like. All it said beyond the Korean name was a pupa.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I'm not going to ask them. Probably their English isn't up to it, and my Korean certainly isn't up to it. So I ordered the dish. It's a stir fry with, you know, bits of vegetables and mm-hmm. these little brown things about the size of a lima bean, a very plentiful serving. Mm-hmm. First bite, I really liked it. By the third bite, I was noticing that it was crunchy in a way that I wasn't used to having food be crunchy in. By about the sixth or seventh bite, I realized I was eating out of my usual species. And I detected, I thought the crunch kind of felt like it had wings and legs involved, and I didn't finish the dish. I'm embarrassed to admit it.
All right. Tell us something
the rest
that
of the
most
food,
of us would eat.
The rest of the food there is really very nice. It's standard Korean, and I don't know if you've been to a Korean restaurant, when you order a main entree-type dish, you get a whole bunch of little dishes. I think you get nine of them. With a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Kimchi, of course, which is a sour Korean-style pickle. But little broccoli florets in a mild, creamy sauce. Three or four chunks of fried potato, some pickled eggplant. I mean, bean sprouts, on and on and on. You feel absolutely luxurious. Mm-hmm. And you can get a variety of beef dishes. They have a lovely seafood pancake that's utterly luscious. So folks can even see a picture of it in the latest issue. And unlike practically every other restaurant in the campus area, around behind the restaurant from Pearl Alley, there is a small parking lot, so you can actually get there.
Wow. 292-8513, 292-8513. If you'd like to join in our conversation, you can also email us at openline@wosu.org. We're speaking with John Champlin and John Marshall, restaurant critics for Columbus Monthly. We're looking at some of the best new restaurants, looking at some of the old standbys, and trying some new things like Korean food. I mean, that's what's – we've all had Chinese food, I think, just about universally. But when you go to a Korean restaurant or an Indonesian restaurant, it's similar but different, and that's where it's fun to experiment and to try new things.
Right. The spices are sometimes different, although, you know, Chinese food is so influential that there will be a couple of Chinese dishes on an Indonesian restaurant menu or a Korean restaurant menu. Yep. I'm not so aware of Chinese dishes on Japanese restaurant menus. Mm-hmm. There's probably cultural considerations of more complexity than I grasp here. And, you know, different styles of cutting and different conceptions of what goes into a meal. Thai food, for example, has a whole category of what they translate as salads, mm-hmm. which aren't really salads, but often modestly elaborate cold appetizers. It's quite a lovely dish. Chinese restaurants in town don't offer characteristically the same range of tiny bite appetizers like, you know, sweetened salty nuts mm-hmm. or whatever that you sometimes find in – or anise-boiled peanuts. The world is a large and complicated place.
Mm-hmm. And there's lots to eat out there.
And complexities within national cuisines. I mean, the range of the different cuisines in China mm-hmm. just really blows my mind every time I try to figure it out.
292-8513, 292-8513. Nick is on the line. Go ahead, Nick.
Hi. I'm a Chinese, and I've been living in Columbus for more than 10 years. And I recently discovered a place, and it's called Coco's Grill on Kings Avenue near campus. And I really like their food. I think they are like authentic Chinese food.
Really?
They are very inexpensive.
On King Avenue?
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's another place. It's not really Chinese, but I like their food. It's kind of like international food. They mixed. There's a Chinese dish, and they sell steaks as well. It's in downtown Dublin. It's called the Jason's Grill.
Yeah, Jason's is a popular restaurant in Dublin mm-hmm. and a good one. Spell Coco's for us.
C-O-C-O.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Coco's Grill.
This is the kind of tip that we come here for. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's funny because overall, I think the Chinese food here is not so good. So I eat a lot of Korean food, even if I'm a Chinese.
Yeah, most of it is you know, what we politely call American Chinese mm-hmm. food,
right?
Meaning it's some sort of either an invention here or a bad version of what you might find in China. And
right,
I have
exactly.
to agree with you. I would say we don't have the range. We don't have restaurants that show off the real range and complexity of Chinese cooking. There are some decent places for sure. You know what I'm noticing more and more is that our Chinese places, China Dynasty, Hunan Lion, will have a more traditional it's funny. You're in a Chinese restaurant with a Chinese menu in front of you, or at least it says that, and then they'll have a Chinese menu within the Chinese menu. And so, for example, the wonderful Chinese – what's called Chinese broccoli, which won't normally be served, is prepared, or a whole steamed fish with ginger and scallions, which I love. Just one of the many ways of preparing fish can be found on some of these Chinese within a Chinese menu.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
Nick. Take care. 292-8513. If you've got a suggestion, Chinese restaurant or otherwise, 292-8513, or you can email us at openline@wosu.org, and we have an open line. This is from Elizabeth. She writes that she read in the Dispatch that Chrissy Hine planned on opening another vegetarian restaurant here in the Columbus area. She has one in Dayton called Vegetarian.
Right. I read that too.
Any ideas of this project, and is it going to open soon?
It's not supposed to open until 2009. I don't think they've even chosen a location yet.
Okay.
If what she's doing is the vegetarian take on Mediterranean cuisine, I will welcome it most warmly.
That's the way it's spelled. It looks like that's what
right.
She's
no, I saw the
do.
Same story in the Dispatch.
Chrissy Hine from The Pretenders, better known as Rush Limbaugh's theme song.
Yes, yes. don't get me started on that.
Ohio native. Well, that's interesting. Another restaurant that's been promised to be open is the Montgomery Inn up in Dublin. I see finally they are pouring the foundation. The sign says coming in 2008, and I was kind of doubting whether or not
and they're just pouring the foundation.
Yeah, the famous rib place out of Cincinnati.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very, very popular down in that area. It's the kind of softer version, you know, fall off the bone kind of ribs that I'm a certified barbecue judge, thank you very much, having gone to school in Cookeville, Tennessee.
I'm so envious.
And it's not what would win barbecue competitions, but people love it. I think it's tasty. I think they have good ribs.
How does it compare to City Barbecue, which is the favorite?
Well, City Barbecue is really more what barbecue traditionalists would say is the way to cook ribs, although, you know, that's just a matter of taste. Yeah. But the City Barbecue ribs are done in a way that the people that founded City Barbecue won some barbecue competitions, know what they're doing. And so it's a meatier, it's a little firmer rib, and it gets its flavor from the dry rub and the smoke as opposed to the sauce.
I see.
So that's kind of the basic difference. Actually, City Barbecue's overall, I think, is the best barbecue place in town. We have some good ones.
Mm-hmm. You reviewed one recently, Cool Shack Barbecue in Hilliard.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
in fact,
good.
I like that very much. I think they did a good job. One of the things I loved there was the they had pork rinds, homemade pork rinds.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, so you want to ride your bike over there to get them. But, really delicious little bag of pork rinds to – instead of a salad, you know.
If you're not going to go healthy, might as well go all the way.
That's right.
292-8513, 292-8513. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead, Tom.
You've kind of moved away from Chinese cooking, but it triggered a thought in my mind I thought was kind of funny and maybe a little interesting. I did a trip to China, and all of the meals sort of turned out to be hosted meals, and everything was served in this big lazy Susan in the middle of the table. And so I'm eating, it's all fine, I'm having a good time, and they would make a big show of bringing out another entree item. And I felt like, well, I should taste it. They're going to the trouble to make this. And so I taste it, but just to taste it and sit there. And then here comes another and another and another. And finally I turned to the translator and I said, "How long will they keep bringing new dishes?" He said, "Until you stop eating." The way they read the situation was they kept trying to find – obviously, I was still hungry because I was still eating, and they were trying to find something that satisfied me. But when you leave a formal meal in China, you leave a full table, full of food, and then the drivers and everybody else eats.
Interesting.
Just a sidebar.
Oh, that's interesting. Next time you go, I'll carry your suitcase.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you, Tom. 292-8513, 292-8513. Barb, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I ate at Sage Saturday night in Clintonville, and I live in Clintonville.
Okay.
It was wonderful.
Oh, good.
Very crowded.
Oh, hear that ring and wonderful?
Yes, it was. I had a ravioli with pine nuts and really cooked onions that was wonderful, and a wonderful, wonderful salad. So it was really wonderful.
All
Parking's
right.
a little bit of an issue, but I don't think I'll go on Saturday night again. Maybe I'll go earlier in the week.
It's out back. Don't you go around back off of High Street for parking?
But it's also there's pizza and some other places there that's a problem.
Barb, what are the prices like?
It was moderately expensive, except for the wine. The wine was not expensive. I was really pleased. I had a Pinot Grigio, and I think it was $6, which lately has been pretty good.
For a glass, not a bottle.
Oh, yeah. I have another place, too.
Sure.
It's a family place. My family loves it for liver and onions, and that's called Noodles at 161 and Carl in that little shopping center.
Is that chain?
No.
No, okay.
No.
All right, there's a Noodles and Company chain that I don't think serves liver and onions.
This place called Noodles. It's locally owned, and it's really comfort food. They also have a piano bar. And then all of the decorations are the Rat Pack. So they do a wonderful happy hour. But the food is real comfort food, liver and onions, meatloaf.
Bravo.
Done really well.
Where is that again?
161 in Cleveland.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's not true. 161 in Carl.
In Carl. Okay.
Carl.
Yeah, I'm trying to place it. But
yeah, Carl.
Now I know where you're talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of there in the back, and it's a great little place.
Okay.
I would highly recommend it.
Great. Thanks for the tip.
I tell you, that part of 161 is turning into modestly priced restaurant mecca. There's an amazing array of international food there.
This is moderately priced. They do a nice bunch of places.
But and even on Morse Road, there's some good places, too.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Barb. 292-8513, 292-8513. If you'd like to join in our discussion, if you've eaten at a place recently that's good, please give us a ring, 292-8513, or you can send us an email at openline at WOSU.org. Mulholland Brewing Company, John Champlin, you reviewed that recently, and then it closed.
It closed. While I was reviewing it, it was packed to the gills, and their nano brewery, as they called it, was turning out some of the very best locally brewed beer I've ever run across.
So what'd you do to the place?
I don't know. I had occasion to go there about, a month or two after I reviewed the place. I have a student who lives out of town. I mean, he's now in his 60s, who likes to visit the places he's read about. So I went there with him, although I hardly ever go back to a place that I've reviewed, and it had fallen off the cliff. The operation was just a pale shadow of its former self. And then 2 weeks later, I read that it had closed. So I don't know what happened.
A lesson in how tough it is to get a restaurant.
I tell you.
Plus the brew pubs. I mean, that's if you're brewing your own beer, just the capital expense to start is so overwhelming. You really start behind, and it's tough to do.
Yeah.
All I can guess, and this is a pure off the top of my guess based on no inside information at all, is that they were located so far out east that after everybody who lived there had been there three times in the first month, they didn't pull enough traffic from the rest of town.
Location, location, location.
That's
right?
What they say.
Yeah.
It may have been the location killed them. That's just a pure guess, though.
Our guests this hour on Open Line, John Champlin and John Marshall, restaurant critics for Columbus Monthly. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the local restaurants in Central Ohio. That's when Open Line continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
After years studying counterinsurgencies, Lieutenant Colonel John Noggle got to practice counterinsurgency tactics in Iraq as the operations officer of a tank battalion. Noggle was on the team that wrote the military's latest counterinsurgency manual. On the next Fresh Air, he talks about the lessons he learned in Iraq. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins later this afternoon. It starts at 1 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich. It is 75 degrees at 10:30. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Don't forget that weekday mornings you can prepare for the day with Morning Edition, starting at 5 a.m., now on WOSU 89.7 FM. WOSU presents the 24th Annual Musicians Against Childhood Cancer Bluegrass Classic, tomorrow, July 23rd through July 26th at Hoover Y Park. More than 40 bluegrass artists will perform, and proceeds from this four-day music festival will benefit St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. For more information about this event, visit bluegrassclassic.com. And in the weather forecast for today, showers and thunderstorms off and on throughout the day, a high of 85. Mostly cloudy tonight, scattered showers, maybe a pop-up thunderstorm, and a low around 62. And then sunny for Wednesday, a little cooler, a high of only 82. And now back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line on WOSU 820 NPR News and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. We are speaking with John Champlin and John Marshall, restaurant critics for Columbus Monthly. These shows are always good to listen to again if you don't happen to be listening with a pen and pencil. We archive our shows on our website, WOSU.org/openline, and you can subscribe to our podcast and download Open Line. Just go to iTunes and search under Open Line, and you'll find it. So just to help with our note takers, we had a request for the name again of the Russian restaurant that you were describing, John.
If you're reading, it's Hawa, H-A-W-A,
okay.
Russia, R-U-S-S-I-A.
Okay. And it's at 161 east of Cleveland.
It's on 161. You have to get there from the little access road that runs parallel to 161, but it faces right on. If you turn on Cleveland and then immediately duck into the access road, it'll take you there.
Okay.
Keep on going east.
And clarification on the address for Coco's. According to the restaurant's website, it's 845 West 5th Avenue in Columbus, and that's west of Olentangy River Road, just west and further back from Burger King. So if you know where that neighborhood is, 292-8513, 292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to share your tips with our guests, John Champlin and John Marshall, restaurant critics for Columbus Monthly. The Creekside area in Gahanna is a new dining district. John Marshall, you've been there.
Yeah, it's really a nice area. I mean, a very beautifully done, constructed development there in Gahanna. And actually, there have been stories about the expense the city paid for that, but it seems well worth it.
They sure got parking right. You just dive down underneath from the street, and there's huge amounts of parking, and it's really nicely signed so you can find the restaurant you're going to without any difficulty at all.
And I reviewed Mezzo, M-E-Z-Z-O, Italian Kitchen and Wine, which is right there in the development, and liked it very much. I thought they had a little bit of work to do to get better, but more than decent Italian food. And a really nice atmosphere right on the creek.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's nice about those districts is you go to a restaurant, then you can walk around afterwards, especially in the nice weather, walk around a little bit afterwards. I think that's why the Short North and German Village and those places are so appealing.
There's patio dining outside facing the water at Mezzo, and, really a pretty spot.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. And, Deb, you have an Indian restaurant recommendation.
Yeah, we had some friends recommend this place to us. It's called Banana Leaf.
Oh, and sure.
Up on Bethel Road, it's Western Southern Indian buffet, and it was just spectacular.
Hiding in behind the jewelry store.
Right. You wouldn't see it driving by it, but the owner was wonderful. He came in and explained all the food to us, which I just, when you're eating something that's a little bit different, was fabulous. And I know that they're opening up next door, too. They're remodeling the next door area and moving into that. So
yeah, I'm very fond of the place. I reviewed it about maybe a year ago. And I am a genuine fan of Indian vegetarian cuisine, of which there are many worlds to be explored. I'm very glad to hear they're still going strong, because since it is hidden at the end of the strip behind the jewelry store, you have to know it's there in order to get to it, pretty much. But it's a nice little operation.
Is it just vegetarian food, or do they serve meat there as well?
Just vegetarian.
Just vegetarian.
Just vegetarian,
We have a handful of Indian vegetarian restaurants.
Yeah.
Udupi Cafe, which is excellent.
Utterly wonderful.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Dosa Corner is a little out-of-the-way place on Old Henderson Road right off Kenny that serves the rice crepes called doses, rice pancakes. That's very nice.
And is Annapurna still open? I'm not sure. I haven't been there for a while.
I don't know. One of our listeners can tell us. I'm not sure that's strictly – is that strictly vegetarian?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there, I know there's some others too.
Okay. Thank you, Deb.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Bye.
It. 292-8513, 292-8513 if you'd like to join in our discussion. You've been reviewing restaurants for quite some time. Have you seen the diversity in restaurants in this area really spread and increase?
Well, I would call it almost an explosion
in
diversity. And that's a function of Columbus over the last 20 years anyway becoming far less homogenous and, more diverse. And that's a happy thing for
eaters. There's a number of things that go into it.
Yeah.
Probably the most important consideration of all is that Columbus now has a fairly large gang of folks who go out to eat, who don't mind spending a nickel if they get value for their money, and who are becoming absolutely adventurous. I've lived in Columbus since 1965, and it was not a restaurant town.
It was grim.
Oh, my God, it was bad. And explosion is by no means too strong a term.
Well, I'll tell you a story.
This is a great restaurant town.
I'll tell you a story. I'm not going to call him out, but I know somebody who's a journalist in Indianapolis who writes – who publishes a – well, I don't want to identify him. But he moved there from Chicago, and I hear reports through my brother who knows him well that Indianapolis, which – you know, Indianapolis is about the size of Columbus, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe even a little larger. They've got – two professional sports teams. Is it two?
I think.
The Pacers and the
and
Colts.
The Colts, right.
And in some ways thought of as more cosmopolitan. And he also knows – this guy knows Columbus pretty well. He says we are light years ahead of Indianapolis in terms of the range and quality of our restaurants overall. So you look at similar-sized cities.
Mm-hmm. The shock for me was when my daughter moved to Oregon and I went out to visit her in Portland. This is now six, seven, 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was so excited to go to Portland because of its reputation as a restaurant town. And there's some very good restaurants there. Mm-hmm. But on the basis of 10 days worth of eating, it's not better than Columbus. As a matter of fact, you get down from the very top, and I think Columbus is stronger in the mid-range.
But they have light rail, though, or streetcars.
And an ocean and mountains.
You know, don't get me wrong. Portland has strengths, but.
Yeah. You like the restaurants here better?
Well, you know, you wonder why.
I was shocked.
I'm not sure why. Maybe one of our listeners has a great theory about that. It's a combination of a number of things. But,
yeah. I think adventurous eaters has got to be a key because you have to have people willing to try new things to make these restaurants go.
I'll tell you one of the reasons is the wonderful influx of Japanese families to this area. We can thank Honda in large part for that. OSU plays a role there. But we have a tremendous number of very good Japanese restaurants, including what John and I and probably most of the food writers in the city think is the best restaurant of any kind in the city, a place called Kihachi. Now, I don't mean best Japanese. I mean best restaurant of any kind.
And where is that?
It's located on Federated Boulevard between Sawmill and 161, and sadly I don't get there very often because I have young kids and don't get out as much as I used to. But it's an absolutely world-class restaurant right here in our little city.
Okay.
And we have a handful that are world-class.
Yep.
We really do.
Speaking of diverse food, Barry, you're on the air. Go ahead, Barry.
Yeah. Hello, yeah. I'm calling. I really appreciate this program because we from West Africa and we have several African restaurants on the east side of Columbus between Livingston and Port Ride, and we have another one between Hamilton Road and Refugee Road.
Yes.
I think it is a West African cooking and is a different flavor from East Africa and North Africa is typically West African cooking. I mean, West is a very, very good food and a very healthy food. We cook lamb and fish and, chicken, whatever.
What are the names of the restaurants?
Che Rama. It's C-H-E-Z, Rama. Che, it means House of Rama in French.
Okay.
Got it.
And the other one is called Medina. Medina restaurant is on Hamilton Road and Refugee Road and it's almost the same cooking, but it's a very good flavor. People need to discover it.
I know of that one, Medina. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, thank you so much for the information. There's a range of – that's a good call because African restaurants have also just there are quite a number of them. Mm-hmm. There are probably six or seven restaurants serving Somali cuisine because we have many thousands of Somalis in Columbus now. Some of them don't have any signs. They're just neighborhood places that people go to.
What's the cuisine like in an African restaurant? I mean, it's a large continent. It must be
It ranges. Yeah, it ranges so dramatically that there's Mike, but the question doesn't make sense because it's like
European food, Italian versus
Say, well, what's European food like, right?
Yeah.
So, because East African and West African have their own characteristics, and each country has its own characteristics, you've probably eaten Ethiopian food,
yes,
a sort of unique cuisine that's largely stews, vegetable or meat stews that are served with a bread, sort of a spongy bread that's
– you eat with your fingers?
Yep. You just pick up a piece of the bread with your fingers. And Blue Nile in just north of campus on High Street is a nice Ethiopian restaurant here in town. Somali food is interesting because it's the country was both a British and Italian colony divided north and south. And so on the one hand, you might get noodles – you know, you might get spaghetti with tomato sauce and then you might get – you know, more traditional foods, rice with roasted goat, or it's the cuisine of a poor country largely, but interesting, tasty food.
Right.
Have we seen a change in Mexican restaurants with the influx of Mexican immigrants coming into town?
Yeah, you can now find some really good, really reasonably priced Mexican restaurants. You have to go search, and we still have, you know, kind of touristy Mexican food. But there's also some very, very nice places. Mm-hmm. The ones that come to mind first are on the west side of town.
For the most part, there's a little out of the way place called La Michoacana on. Well, that's the grocery store I'm thinking of.
Right, but that's also a restaurant, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a restaurant. It's a La Michoacana grocery store on Morse Road, right? And it's got a restaurant connected to it. And then out on the west side, in what used to be that Westland Mall area, is La Plaza Tapatia.
Right.
If anybody wants to experience really wonderful, it's a regional Mexican cooking, but pozole, the stew of pork and hominy, that's traditionally served with chips, tortilla chips and radish, and sometimes avocado and chopped onion and cilantro. La Plaza Tapatia has that on weekends. Mm-hmm.
And when you walk into these restaurants, if you want good food, you're not always going to get the fanciest decor. And you have to sort of look beyond that if you want to look for good, authentic food, especially in a restaurant that is just starting out, a family-owned ethnic restaurant.
Yeah. But on the other hand, La Plaza Tapatia has a certain style to it.
Yeah.
They've created a courtyard effect by putting little veranda-type roofs around the booths on the walls. And every once in a while, I couldn't figure out the pattern. There are even mariachi musicians who stroll over to your table.
That's terrific.
It's got a real atmosphere.
Okay. Tom has a Mexican restaurant recommendation.
Ooh,
go ahead, Tom.
There's a restaurant. I'm not sure of the name. I think it's Swallows or something. It's a Mexican lady's name at the corner of Northwood and High Street. And I had four different things there at different times, and they were all just exceptional. Ooh. So the relleno is wonderful.
At Northwood and High.
Northwood and High.
I mean, usually I think chile relleno is one of those dishes that can often be prepared too, I don't know, greasy, oily, whatever. It was just exceptional. So,
good. Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you, Tom. 292-8513, 292-8513. And let's go to Mary. You're on the line. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes, thank you. I was recently in San Diego and went to a Vietnamese restaurant that served spring rolls with piles of fresh lettuce and fresh mint that you could wrap the spring roll in. And I was wondering if you had been to a Vietnamese restaurant in Columbus and could recommend one, and specifically that served a lot of lettuce and mint. That was a wonderful combination.
Yeah, first of all, in the North Market, there's a little stand that has Vietnamese food, very popular at lunch. So if you go there at noon, be prepared to wait in line. Very inexpensive, and it'll serve, rice noodles. There's a wonderful Banchajiao, which is did I pronounce that right, John? I always look to Champlin for correct pronunciation.
I recognized it.
and it sometimes you can have it with the grilled chicken or shrimp or cut up egg rolls in with the rice noodles, served with a dressing, but it has lettuce and mint and other herbs, sometimes the basil. And that's a nice place. There's another Vietnamese restaurant on Morse Road called I hope one of our listeners can help me. La Playa, perhaps?
Something like that.
Whereabouts on Morse?
It is just to the east of Carl and Morse, I believe.
That area you were talking about,
yeah.
John Champlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She said
Vietnamese and I started to weep.
On the north side. It's on the north side. Mm-hmm. So if you're on Morse Road, if you're at Morse and 71 and you head east, look to your left. Careful if you're driving, but look to your left and you'll see a Vietnamese restaurant there that's really quite nice. And I'm so sorry, I can't remember the name. It'll come to me probably after we're off the air. But that's those are two recommendations for Vietnamese restaurants. Now, Saigon Palace downtown on Front Street is still open as well.
Is it?
I drove by it the other day and there was a sign said open. Unless the sign's just there from the old days, I think they're still open.
Somebody told me that it wasn't open.
The couple that used to run it sold it, I believe.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
This helps, Mary.
Drive up Morse Road and see if I can find that.
Sure. Or go to the North Market. That's a good place.
I will, too.
Thanks you. Thank you, Mary. 292-8513, 292-8513. If you'd like to ask a question of our guest, John Champlin, John Marshall, restaurant critics for Columbus Monthly, two men who are very tuned into the restaurant industry and know where to eat, where to get lunch, where to get dinner here in the central Ohio area. Old standbys. Any change? I mean, the Cameron Mitchell restaurants and
still humming
Cameron's
along,
chugging along. I just read in the paper today that they're going to fiddle with the Claremont.
Well,
down
no,
there
Tom,
on South
that's not owned by Cameron Mitchell.
No, that's not Cameron's.
No,
I was thinking old standbys.
Yeah. Well, yes, they're going to renovate the Claremont. Their menu has a little sign that says, "Don't worry, fans. We're not going to take your old Claremont away. We're just going to make it better."
I started to worry right away, of course.
Don't worry, the tomato soup will still be on the menu, I'm sure. they have a wonderful cream of tomato soup at the Claremont, have for years. Cameron Mitchell has his the pulse of the dining public, always has. Yeah. He's a tremendous sense, he and his team. And he sold the steak and fish houses, but he still has a number of restaurants, including these Marcellas, these new Italian sort of bistro-y places, which I thought was really good. I really liked it.
Yeah, it's an eclectic kind of take on Italian food. Evidently, they went over there and ate around and came back with some of the best ideas and put them together. It's not quite a place I'd expect to find in Italy, but
no,
they got
not,
a number of touches really it, down
it's,
well.
It's not Piedmontese. It's not Tuscan. It's right. got some
– It's not a Vinoteca. It's not quite a restaurant.
It's got pieces, parts of all those things.
It's a nice place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stephen, you're on the air. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, how you doing there? You're talking about Vietnamese restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Place that I'm thinking about, it's called China Jade, but it's off of Bush Boulevard, right back behind Wendy's. There's a little strip mall in there. And I know they have the Vietnamese spring rolls there. They also have some odd dishes. They actually have like a Vietnamese menu, which is a lot of soups and some stuff they cook in clay pots. I haven't tried that stuff yet. But China Jade.
Jade. And tell me where it is again.
It's on Bush Boulevard, but there's a little drive back behind the Wendy's and I don't think what other restaurants.
So it's sort of near the continent then, right?
Right, near the continent,
yeah.
Right.
Got okay. it. Yeah. All right, great.
Okay.
And I don't know how many Chinese or Asian – he's talking about one that's probably Chinese plus they have a Vietnamese menu.
Right.
And that's
right.
not uncommon, which probably means it's owned by Vietnamese folks who feel if they're going to be successful, they've got to have a Chinese menu, and that may be so. I don't know how many Chinese restaurants there are in Columbus.
There's lots.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Steve. And Karen. Karen, you're on the air with John Champlin and John Marshall, restaurant critics for Columbus Monthly.
Hi. Appreciate your show. One thing I don't hear a lot of, I don't eat a lot in Columbus, but occasionally I do, but I mean up in Toledo where I'm originally from, but is service is such a key. You were talking about the one brewing place that went out of business. My husband and I go to so many places where it's just horrible service. The televisions are blasting. The music is blasting. The wait staff don't take away dirty dishes. They don't offer refills of anything. They're not polite. They don't know their menu. We actually had a waitress 2 years ago spill beer on my husband and didn't offer anything.
Oh, jeez.
We left this restaurant. It was down the street from our house. It's an old established place in Toledo. The owner actually asked why we were so upset, gave us a free meal, whatever we wanted next time around. We actually went back again and ate anything we wanted, and it was still horrible. So service is the key. There's so many restaurants, and the wait staff, like I said, the televisions, I'm so tired of televisions and restaurants. I'm tired of the loud blasting music, and when you ask to turn it down, and I'm tired of them being super cold with the air conditioning.
Uh-huh.
So
these are all the complaints of us baby boomer types, right?
Well, definitely. And then the cleanliness. Working for a health department, I see a lot of places that I don't mind the hole-in-the-wall place. As a health department person, I would probably never eat out in a restaurant after seeing so many of them for 18 years. But there's some that, I mean, that they actually try, and maybe the violations aren't so bad. But the ones that just flaunt it in your face, I don't want to frequent those type of places and give them my money, especially if, as a personal, you know, person, I've written to them saying, here's what I've noticed, and then they'll not either respond, they won't respond to me, or they'll respond poorly.
Luckily, so, the human body is resilient to infection.
fairly resilient, but just those are things that I would like to see as part of reviews. Mm-hmm. As far as the ambiance too, because I really just like,
yeah, we do talk about that. I have to say that John and I give the food so much more credit or consideration in reviews, but we always talk about service and ambiance, and you know, if it's particularly good or particularly bad, we try to note that, or we want to give you a sense of the ambiance, the atmosphere of a place, because that can really enhance or detract from a meal. I got to say, it's not a general defense of all restaurant owners or the restaurant business, because you know, spending the time training servers is something that some places don't spend enough time on, without a doubt. But it is really hard to get and keep good servers. It's a transient population for the most part. It's a young transient population, and what are you going to do? It's just the nature of the beast. And the profit margin in the restaurant business is so slim that, frankly, you know, you really, unless it's an upscale place where people stick around because they make good money on tips, mm-hmm. it's tough.
Yeah.
Because it's not a well-paid profession, obviously.
Yeah. One of the delights that I have come to cherish is to walk into a restaurant and notice that the wait staff is older than their 20s. I just automatically then assume I'm going to be treated well.
Mm-hmm. What's with the televisions? That's my wife's pet peeve. Every restaurant, no matter which table, not every restaurant, but a lot of restaurants, there's a TV within eyeshot.
And I can tell from looking at you, you're not a baby boomer. So,
no.
You know, that's a complaint from a younger person. Mm-hmm. I'm annoyed by it too, and I suspect a lot of people are. It's just mm-hmm. sort of, you know, well, we got to do this, people want it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
To me, you go out to a restaurant to spend time with the person you're there with, mm-hmm. and have human conversation and not sit. Now, sports bar is a sports bar. That's
right.
Different experience.
It seems
I can
like
understand
every restaurant
that
is trying to be a sports bar by having the TV off in the corner. So if you happen to go out to dinner and the Buckeyes are playing, you can monitor it.
Well, in Columbus, I guess, if you don't have a TV at that point.
Yeah. Nobody goes out to dinner on football days.
That's the best time to go out to dinner.
That's the best time I noticed during to do anything in Columbus.
Yeah.
During a home game.
Okay. Andy, let's go to you. Andy, you're on the line. Go ahead, Andy.
How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks.
I'm from the East Side, and I'm wondering if you guys are familiar with the name Bill Sapp?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, he's back in town, and he opened up a little restaurant across from the top called the Bexley Bistro. Have you been there?
No, we haven't. And this is news to me, John.
No, I've not heard that.
You guys better get on out and get over there. Him and his wife have opened up this little place. He's owned the building, I think, for years. It's old Kentucky Fried Chicken, the first Kentucky Fried Chicken building in Columbus. But it seats maybe 18, 19 people with about 10 people at a tiny bar. He's picked out like 9 or 10 of his favorite things he's done over the years, put them on the menu, and then he's got lunches. All his lunch menus are $4.95, and they're killer.
We're both scribbling away.
Yes.
You better get over there. Very few people go there. They don't know it's there.
Uh-huh. Tell everybody who Bill Sapp is.
Bill Sapp was partners original with Kahiki
right.
and The Top.
Right. The Top restaurant is where I remember from, and he sold right. it a few years back.
Yes.
Yep.
But he did. He was one of the original guys at the Kahiki, too.
Yep.
And now it's 1955. He's been in the business. He's been in Florida for years, and he's decided to come back up to Columbus and play golf and occasionally sit around this restaurant. He's in there two or three days a week talking and stuff if you want to hear history.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But I'm telling you what, you won't find some stuff on the menu. It's stuff that people used to make over the years. I'm 52, so I'm familiar with a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
But it's stuff you don't see on menus anymore.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for the tip.
We got to move on, Andy. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your time. Goodbye.
Appreciate it. Take care. We have an email. Fabulous Mediterranean restaurant located at 161 in Cleveland named Nazareth. You guys ever heard of
it? Oh,
that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, very much. Been there for lunch. I think it's a terrific place.
Uh-huh. They said the service is very fast and prices are reasonable. So there's
yep.
an email tip. And Melissa. Go ahead, Melissa. You're on the air.
Hi. I always enjoy these discussions. Calling for a couple things. One is the Banana Leaf restaurant that you mentioned on Bethel Road. That is behind Johnny B's or Johnny Bocelli's, the restaurant. That's no longer a jewelry shop. I thought I'd let you know.
Oh, thank you.
The callers could locate that. That hasn't been a jewelry shop for a while. Secondly, my favorite restaurant, one of them is Villanova on North High Street. Always packed, very good Italian food, and I really think the best lasagna that I've tasted. I almost hate to mention it because it's always packed anyway, and that's often a measure of a good restaurant for me.
Well, I drive by that because I live not far from that area, and I drive by it frequently, and I got to say, it seems to the little parking lot's full all the time, so that's telling me something.
Yeah, it is. Well, thank you for the conversation.
Thank you, Melissa. Just a couple of minutes left. If you had to pick an Italian restaurant, John Marshall, which would it be in town?
Well, first I'd fly to Rome, and then let's get started.
That's right.
No, that's a tough one because we have a bunch of really good Italian restaurants. I don't know that we have, and I would argue this point, I don't think we have a world-class Italian restaurant yet. We're getting mm-hmm. there. We're inching in that direction. But there's a good one. G. Michael's in German Village is good. Scali out in Reynoldsburg is good, especially the specials. Giuseppe's.
Bazzi Italia.
Giuseppe's in Bexley. Mm-hmm. La Tavola. Did I get that right?
La Tavola,
mm-hmm. Which is on Riverside Drive.
Way up. It's worth going to.
Yeah,
that's I've been there. And what's amazing is that that's the first place that's stuck in that building in quite a while. The pubs and bars and restaurants have come and gone in that building, but they've stuck.
If they do a good enough job, folks will go there just to be there.
And Cameron's place, Marcella's.
Yeah.
Good.
Absolutely.
It's a good place.
Is there a restaurant cuisine that we're lacking here in Columbus, Cuban cuisine?
Starliner Diner still has some good Cuban food out in Hilliard. Ask any question we've got.
Got answers. Do they have mojitos there?
But, you know, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Uh-huh. I'm not sure they have a liquor license. In any event, we have no Afghan cuisine, darn it.
Gee.
I've had Afghan cuisine in Minneapolis. It was very good.
No Armenian food that I'm aware of. Let's start with the A's, right? no Bhutanese food that I'm aware of, although we're going to get some refugees from Bhutan sometime in the next couple of years.
I think Columbus is ready for a truly expensive, world-class. You go in and you look at the prices and you say, oh, my God. And then the food comes and you say, oh, I didn't know things could taste like this.
You mean like when you go to Las Vegas
yes.
and go to Joël Robuchon?
Yes, I think we're ready to support one of those. And the other complaint that I've been complaining for years, we are a lot better than we used to be. But I really love bottom of the scale restaurants where somebody knows how to cook, just gets a hold of a kitchen and starts turning out food they're familiar with from childhood.
Okay.
That's such a pleasure.
All right.
Like your house.
Well, yeah, but that's not open for business.
John Champlin, John Marshall, restaurant critics for Columbus Monthly. Thanks very much for joining us here on Open Line.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Next hour, we'll talk about disabilities, living with disabilities in America, and fighting for the rights of the disabled. And Open Line continues on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.